Liam says to Joel, I know about the girls, and you just continue to stand at the bottom of the stairs?
I was very afraid and wanted to take the girls to their rooms upstairs, and I was about to when the loud banging started on the front door. They stopped shouting.
Rosa looked down, reached for her wadded-up tissue, and blew her nose.
I waited, too. I thought it was Roberto coming to get me. But then I realized that he could not have gotten here so fast. You know, it had only been a few minutes since I had called him. He worked over on Alhambra Drive, not all that far from here, but it still takes at least 10 minutes to get from there to here. So I waited to see who was at the door knocking so loudly. I thought maybe Miss Tessa had come back, but it could not be her because she had keys, and she always came in through the garage and entered the house through the kitchen door.
Sam looked at Tessa for confirmation.
At least that's true, she said.
Go on, Sam coaxed Rosa.
Mr. Jameson, Mr. Joel, answered the door, and Mr. Liam followed him. I thought that now is my chance, so I ran to the kitchen and told both girls to go out to the pool immediately. They did as I said. No questions, because I think they did not want to hear their father and uncle yelling in front of them. They had shorts on, no swimwear, but I said to them, "Hurry out and go swim."
"Stop!" Tessa shouted, no longer caring what Sam or Jill said. "How in God's name could you not come forth with this information? I have spent a decade rotting in a prison cell. I lost my family, Rosa. Everything dear to me was taken that day, all that I loved. And you just up and left. You walked out the door just like it was a normal day. How could you?"
Her voice was loud and harsh, but she no longer cared. Sitting here and listening to Rosa talk about that day, as though it were just any other cleaning day at the Jameson residence, made her seethe with rage. She didn't care whether her words hurt Rosa or not. Glaring at the woman, knowing her eyes shone with hot anger, she could not stop herself.
"You are nothing but a coward. You know that? You left two innocent little girls alone to die."
"Miss Tessa."
"Shut up! You ruined my life. You watched my family die."
She spat the words so contemptuously, she surprised herself. Sam held up his hand.
"Calm down, Tess. We're not getting anything accomplished. I understand your anger. We all do. We will find out the truth. No matter what, I swear."
He said this while staring at Rosa.
"I am very sorry, Miss Tessa. I cannot change what I did that day and afterward. I live with it every day of my life. I am not a happy woman.
She blotted her eyes again.
"I pray for their souls at church. I swear to you."
At that admission, Rosa began to sob in earnest, then genuflected. Tessa felt a twinge of compassion for the woman, but only a twinge.
"Jill, why don't you and Tess get us something to drink?" Sam asked. "I think we could use a break."
"Come on, Tessa." Jill took her friend by the hand and led her into the kitchen. For a minute, neither spoke, as Tessa removed glasses from the cupboard while Jill took 4 cans of Coke from the refrigerator. Tessa filled each glass with ice, found a tray, and placed the glasses on it, along with the Cokes.
"Why do I feel like strangling the life out of that woman? Can you tell me that? I can barely stand to look at her," Tessa said.
I don't know of anyone in their right mind who wouldn't feel exactly as you do. Her inaction has changed many lives, Tessa. As long as you're not planning on acting on those thoughts, as a psychiatrist, I would tell you your reaction is perfectly normal. If she only knew how serious she was. But even through her rage, it wasn't Rosa she ultimately wanted to punish. It was Liam.
Chapter 21. 20 minutes later, after they'd had a chance to calm down and Tessa was in control of her emotions, Sam asked Rosa if she wanted to go home or continue.
"I will stay as long as I need to," Rosa told him. "I want to help. Honestly."
"Okay. Let's go back to your telling the girls to go to the pool. What did you do next?"
"I thought I needed to watch the girls, so I slipped inside the pool house. I could watch them from the window. The girls seemed okay, and they sat by the edge of the big pool. First they put their feet in the water, then a few minutes later they got into the pool. It was okay for them to do that. They were very good swimmers, but Miss Tessa always wanted me to watch them at the poolside. I always did."
Rosa closed her eyes.
"I stayed by the window and watched."
"How long?"
Sam questioned. Tessa's heart was beating so fast, she had to take several deep breaths to calm herself.
"I think it was at least half an hour."
"And during this time that you were in the pool house, watching the girls, did you see anything unusual, hear anything?"
Sam asked.
"No, not then. I just watched Poppy and Piper playing in the pool. They were having fun."
Tessa could visualize both the girls in their pool. They had all kinds of games they played. Some were the usual. Marco Polo, Dive for Gold, Mermaids. And they had their own games they'd made up, which consisted of going underwater to see who could hold her breath longer. It was something she did not approve of, and she had told them so. But she knew they still played the game, and as long as they didn't take it too far, she hadn't told them she knew. Another was to close their eyes, float on their backs, and see where they ended up when they decided to open their eyes. Endless games that were, for the most part, harmless. But Tessa insisted an adult be at the pool when they were swimming or playing, despite the fact that both were excellent swimmers.
"You watched the girls playing for half an hour and saw nothing unusual. What did you see after the half hour you watched the girls swimming?"
Sam asked, and Tessa could hear the impatience in his voice. He was walking her through her story like a child, and she knew why, but it was frustrating, to say the least, to sit here and listen to Rosa tell about her memories of that fateful day.
"Mr. Jameson came out to the pool area, the living area. Liam followed him, and that other man."
"Who was the other man you saw?"
Rosa looked down again, then met Tessa's stare.
"I had not seen this man, ever, but I had seen him, sort of."
Sam was losing his patience, Tessa could tell. He rolled his shoulders, raked his hand through his hair, took another sip of his soft drink.
"Okay, Rosa, you're not being very clear. Explain what you mean by you had seen this other man, sort of."
"He was like Mr. Jameson. Like Joel."
The proverbial "you could hear a pin drop" came to mind when Tessa heard what Rosa had said.
"You need to be very clear, Rosa. Beating around the bush isn't helping you, and it's not helping Mrs. Jameson. I want you to tell me the truth. You have mastered English, and I know you're not having trouble coming up with the right words. I'm going to give you one more chance, then we're done."
Sam waited for her to speak.
It was just as I am telling you. I have no other way to explain what I saw, other than the man looked just like Mr. Jameson, Mr. Joel Jameson, not like Liam. I thought, I know it sounds very odd, but that man looked like he could be Mr. Jameson's twin brother.
Tessa struggled to hide her confusion. I don't understand. Are you telling us that this other man, the one banging on the front door, looked just like Joel?
Yes, Miss Tessa. He looked just like your husband.
She turned to Sam. I don't understand. This couldn't be right. While Liam and Joel were half-brothers, they really didn't resemble one another all that much. Both were tall, but Joel was fair, where Liam was olive-skinned, as was Rochelle, his mother. There were a few similarities in their build, but nothing that could make one conclude they looked exactly alike.
"Tell me about this other man," Sam said. "Every detail you remember."
She watched Sam, expecting him to be as stunned as she was. She was surprised that he didn't appear the least bit rattled at Rosa's description of the other man.
"I just saw him for a few minutes. He was tall, like Mr. Joel. Is it okay if I call him that?"
"Yes," Sam replied. "Go on."
"He got up in Mr. Joel's face. I think he yelled, but I couldn't hear. It just looked like he was very angry, and Mr. Joel, well, he seemed shocked. Then he became very angry, too."
"What was Liam doing during this exchange between Joel's visitor and Joel?"
"I think he was hollering, too, but I couldn't hear what any of them were saying. It just looked like they were all very angry. I only wanted to make sure the girls were okay, but I could see them from my spot at the window. They had gone to the end of the pool, and this brought them closer to the three men."
"Did you come out of the pool house? Did it ever occur to you to get the girls out of the pool and take them somewhere safe, away from the men?" Sam asked her.
"Yes, but I knew I had to wait until the men had calmed down. I assumed they were arguing about business, or whatever it was that Mr. Jameson, Liam, I mean, said he knew about the girls. So I just waited. I saw that the girls had swum to the other end of the pool. As you can see, it's a very big pool."
She waved toward the glass doors that led out to the pool.
"I was sure they couldn't hear the men, so I went to the kitchen. Well, it's not really a full-sized kitchen, but it had a small refrigerator. Miss Tessa always had snacks for the girls in the pool house. There was a sink and a coffee maker. I made a pot of coffee and sat at the bar. I was going to stay there, keep an eye on the girls, and as soon as the men were gone, I was going to bring them back inside and call Miss Tessa."
"But that isn't what happened, is it?"
More tears from Rosa.
"No. It was so horrible. I can't describe. When I peered out the window to check on the girls, they weren't in the pool. I thought they'd gone back inside the house. This is what I thought because I did not see them go inside from the window of the pool house. I assumed they had all gone inside, and I was very scared. I knew that Roberto was probably waiting outside the gate for me, because that's what I told him to do when I'd called him."
"We need to wind this up, Rosa. It's late, and I'm sure you're stalling. I want you to tell me what you saw when you finally decided to come out of the pool house to meet Roberto."
There were more tears and nose-blowing from Rosa, but she knew the enormity of her situation. At least Tessa thought so. Rosa shifted her shoulders back again, then seemed determined to finish the story she should have told more than a decade ago.
When I left the pool house, I knew that Roberto would be waiting in the front outside the gates, so I went out the side door. And that's when I saw him running from the garage. And when I saw who it was, I stopped and waited. I didn't want him to see me. I was so scared. And I knew that, well, I was not here legally. We had all come from Mexico and were just thankful to be safe. It took many, many years, but my entire family are now American citizens. I did not want to return to Mexico with all the drug lords and killings. It is a very bad place to live. Mr. Jameson knew I was not a citizen when he hired me, but assured me that he would do everything in his power to assist me and my family so that we could be here legally.
Rosa, I don't care about your legal status, and Tess doesn't either. It's of no relevance whatsoever to the current situation. It wasn't then, and it's not now. Get to the point.
Sam was being hateful and didn't seem to care.
As I waited by the corner of the house for my brother, I saw him. He came out through the garage door, and he ran across the lawn, then through the gates. I saw Roberto, and I ran to get in the car with him. I had to leave because I did not want to get involved with the police.
Why would you think this argument these three men were having would involve the police?
Rosa, who had appeared weak and frightened before this, all of a sudden seemed courageous when she spoke.
Because Mr. Joel had blood all over him when I saw him running away from the house.
Chapter 22.
But that's impossible!
Tessa shouted, rising from her chair and lurching toward Rosa as if she meant to do her harm.
You lying bitch! You have lost your mind! There is absolutely no way you saw my husband running from his own home and with blood all over him.
Enraged, she turned to Sam.
Do you believe her? Rosa, you have to be mistaken, said Jill. Mr. Jameson was later found in the pool with the girls. Maybe you imagined this? You were so frightened when you saw the bodies in the pool, you were unable to handle the shock. You were traumatized by what you saw in the pool, and this account is the result of post-traumatic stress disorder.
No! No, never! I know what I saw that day. I am a lot of things, but I am not a crazy woman. I did not see any bodies in the pool, not then or ever. This I swear to you on all that is holy. I only saw what I saw. When I heard the news later, I thought that this horrible crime must have happened after I left with Robert.
Is it possible Rosa is telling the truth? Tessa had more questions than answers, and could not see how any of this would help her as regards to seeing Liam brought to justice or taking her revenge on him for what he did.
Would you be willing to submit to a polygraph?
Sam asked her.
What is that? I do not understand the word you just used,
Rosa asked, her tone filled with skepticism.
It's a test that determines if you're telling the truth or lying,
Sam told her.
If you're telling the truth, this test will prove it.
Then I will take the test. I am not a crazy woman, I swear to you. I did not see bodies. And I am not lying. I saw Mr. Jameson, Mr. Joel. He was running. And there was blood all over him. I never went back to look in on the children. That is something I will have to live with for the rest of my life. For that, I will never forgive myself. I may not be a smart and educated woman like Miss Tessa and Miss Jill are, but I do not say things that are untrue. I admit, I was very wrong not to come forward to the police. I told you why, and I have never had a peaceful day since.
Is she telling the truth? It was so bizarre. Tessa had a hard time wrapping her mind around the implications if she was telling the truth. It made absolutely no sense at all. How could Joel be in two places at once? And this other man, who was he? Was Rosa sure of her description of him? Tessa didn't know. How could she? All she did know was that she was more confused than ever, and almost wished she were back in prison. At least there, her days were predictable.
I can arrange for the polygraph first thing tomorrow morning. I'll send a car for you,
Sam told Rosa.
That is, if you're sure you want to do this. You may want to consult with an attorney. Talk this over with your family first.
No! I will say what I saw. I did not come forward 10 years ago. That is my crime, and I will go to jail for that. I deserve whatever punishment the court decides. I did not imagine what I saw. The image is very, very clear to me today, the same as it was then. I have agreed to help Miss Tessa now. I will do whatever I have to do for her.
Tessa, who had taken her seat again as Rosa spoke, couldn't remain quiet any longer.
Rosa, how could you see Joel? He died at the same time the girls did.
Is it possible it was Liam you saw? Or the other man who you said looked like Joel? Tessa tried to speak as calmly as she could, but it was very difficult, almost impossible.
I have told you exactly what I saw, and I will take the test Mr. Sam mentioned. It was not Mr. Liam. He has that dark hair, not like Mr. Joel. And it was not the other man, either. By that time, I had known Mr. Joel for 10 years. There is no way I could mistake someone else for him.
Sam? She asked. What do we do with this? She shifted her head toward Rosa.
Let me call Lee. I'll be right back.
Sam went to the kitchen, leaving the three women alone. An awkwardness permeated the room. Tessa could not wait until Sam returned before resuming her questioning. Rosa, I know that you're not crazy, but I know from personal experience, when you see something that is so violent, the mind does strange things. It took me years before I could completely remember the day I came home and discovered the bodies in the swimming pool. It was the worst day of my life, and there is nothing I can do or say to bring my family back. They're gone forever. But I can see to it that they get justice. I did not murder my family. Tessa said this without tears. I loved them with my entire heart and soul. They were my life, my reason for living. You know that. I understand you might have been confused at the time. I certainly was when I found them, and I believe it's part of the reason I went to prison. I was so stunned. Jill's diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder is probably accurate. I should have spoken up in my own defense. People can have this and not even be aware of it. I wasn't sure I had this for several years. It was not until I had lots of shitty prison counseling and did a lot of reading that I realized I'd suffered from this, and probably still do. It's not a crime to admit you were wrong, Tessa pleaded, hoping to make an impression on Rosa. Tessa was most likely in shock the day she found her family butchered in the pool, too. so at least that part she could identify with. Rosa's not telling the police what she had seen that day. Well, that wasn't quite as easy to understand. Rosa's hair had completely unraveled now, the long gray strands nearly reaching her waist.
I am so sorry, Miss Tessa.
You know, I...
No.
You have lost your family. I cannot ask you to forgive me or understand. But I will do what I can to make this right. I will take the test, then I will go to jail. I deserve to.
You're not going to go to jail, Rosa. Even if you committed a crime by not coming forward to tell the police what you saw that day, it was more than 10 years ago. That is way beyond the statute of limitations for whatever crime you might be guilty of. So you are not going to jail.
What is this statute of limitations you just referred to, Miss Jill? I do not understand. I am guilty of a crime and should be punished.
The statute of limitations says that after enough time has passed since a crime was committed, the guilty person cannot be tried for that crime. There are some exceptions, like murder, for which there is no such thing as a statute of limitations. All we're trying to do is bring new evidence to trial, though we're hoping this doesn't even go to trial. We just want to find the person or persons who committed these horrible crimes, and see to it that they're finally punished. Jill explained, in her most professional manner.
Really?
Rosa asked, amazement in her voice.
It's very possible you won't even have to testify, Jill said, turning to look at Tessa.
She's right. But as Sam and Lee said, there are no guarantees. I'm only here now because of a new ruling by the Florida Supreme Court. If there is no new, convincing, provable evidence, I will return to prison and serve out the remainder of my 3 life sentences.
I stand behind what I saw. I am not quite sure how the court works. I have always been told to tell the truth. This one time in my life, I ran like a coward. About that, you were absolutely right. I will tell the court the truth about that, too. But I cannot lie about what I saw, Miss Tessa. I know it was Mr. Joel I saw running from the house. I worked for you and him for 10 years. There is no way I could mistake anyone else for him. I don't understand, the circumstantial way so much. But I understand truth.
Sam came back into the room.
Lee has arranged for a polygraph tomorrow morning, as soon as his meeting with Rochelle is over. He couldn't give me an exact time, but wanted me to ask Rosa if she would be willing to wait in his office.
I will do what I must. I have told Miss Tessa and Miss Jill that I will tell my story. I will tell exactly what I saw that horrible day.
Rosa seemed to have a newfound confidence. Why, no clue, but Tessa wasn't sure if it was a good thing or a bad thing, given what she said she had witnessed. There was no way it could be possible. But if it's what she believed, and if the DA thought it worthwhile, then so be it. But even if the DA did not believe what she says she saw, the fact that it was Saturday and her family was still alive meant that she could not have been the killer, and the state's case was impossible, since it relied upon the deaths having occurred on Friday, not Saturday or later.
She was so very tired, mentally and emotionally.
At this point, all she wanted to do was right the wrongs of the past, and if it took an insane story by her former housekeeper to convince the DA and the judge that there was new evidence
that meant she could not have killed her family? Then it is what it is.
Chapter 23. Sam arranged for Cal to take Rosa home and remain near her house for the rest of the night in case she decided to take a sudden trip. He would remain there until it was time for him to take her to Lee's office the following morning. Of course, Sam didn't mention the surveillance part to Rosa.
"I hope she doesn't climb out the window," Jill said. "Though I am convinced she thinks she saw Joel. I don't understand. But if she did see the bodies, then this could be her way of coping. People are unique in finding ways to cope when they have been traumatized. It's my professional opinion this is what Rosa has been doing all these years to cope with her guilt.
She seems so damned sure of what she saw. We all know it's impossible. I don't know if we, Lee and his team, will be able to convince her that she could not have seen what she says she saw."
"Sam?" Tessa asked. "What do you make of her story?"
He rubbed the dark stubble on his cheeks. "She's convinced she saw what she says she did. She thinks she saw Joel, so it might be something worth checking into."
"You're not serious, I hope," Tessa barked.
"I am very serious, Tess. Tomorrow we'll have more to work with. Harry's put the rush on the DNA, so we will have physical evidence if we can get a match on the bones. And remember the watch. Harry was able to get DNA from that as well."
"And we all know Joel's DNA will be on his watch. I can't see how that is going to prove anything other than that the watch belonged to him."
"It's not the DNA so much, but the time the watch stopped, the date, and where and when the watch was located. I packed that myself, so I can testify to that if it comes down to it. But personally, neither Lee nor I think this will ever hit the courtroom a second time. Michael Chen is an ass, but for an ass, he's actually pretty smart. If his big history-making case turns out to be a disaster, as it will, since the victims were still alive after you had arrived in San Maribel, he'll find a way to use it to his advantage. Lee seems to believe he's going to make a run for governor."
"Sam, do you think Rosa is telling the truth? You said you packed Joel's watch yourself. It was in his desk. This was after his death. How do you explain that?"
Sam took a deep breath and pinched the bridge of his nose.
"I can't."
"So what exactly does this mean? I know I'm wiped out and you are as well, but I don't think any of us actually believes that Joel put that watch in his desk for you or anyone else to find. Given the significance of the date and time, it's impossible."
Tessa was so mentally drained, it was becoming hard for her to apply reason and logic to the facts as they were becoming available to them.
"You're probably right, Tess. But right now, I'm virtually certain that Lee can get your case tossed out. Meanwhile, we will continue to dig deeper into what we find. I don't want to be a bummer, but I'm calling it a night. I have got to get up with the chickens, and that's not much longer."
Sam stood and stretched. His shirt was untucked, and when he stretched, he revealed a muscular waist. Tessa tore her eyes away before he caught her looking.
"I need to get out of here myself. I've got a client early, and I can't reschedule, but I will cancel the rest of the week. I want to be here with you, this time, every step of the way," Jill said.
"You can stay here. There's plenty of room," Tessa said, hating to see her leave. Their friendship had picked up right where it left off, and despite the years and Tessa's refusal of her letters and visits, it was just like old times, easy and relaxed, with each knowing what the other thought before the words came out of her mouth.
"I know, and I will another time. Maybe tomorrow. I have a bit of reading to do when I get home, so I'll call it a night. I'll call you tomorrow, as soon as I finish with my patient."
She leaned in and gave Tessa a hug. Watch yourself when you leave. Those media whores are still hanging out by the gates, Tessa reminded her. Jill laughed.
I'll watch for them, and if they give me any crap, I'll flip them the bird. That should give them something for tomorrow's front page.
Tessa laughed, too, and for the first time in a very, very long time, she felt just a moment's happiness.
I don't know if I'd go that far, she added.
Of course I would never do that. But I did get a smile out of you, Jill said.
Are you okay?
Seriously, do you think you're going to be able to deal with everything?
I'm just grateful for the chance, Tessa said. It was never going to be easy. I have realized that all along. But I want to do whatever I can to find the person responsible.
She wanted to say Liam, not the wishy-washy person responsible. But she didn't, for fear she would actually slip up and tell Jill what she was planning to do when she found the bastard. Even though she had no formal plans, they had to find him first. Then she would seriously begin to plan his death. I'll be here every step of the way, Jill said. Now, I'm going to sneak out the back.
She grabbed her giant tote bag and Sam waited by the door.
I'll walk you to your car, he said to Jill.
Then to Tessa.
Wait here.
She sat down on the sofa, totally exhausted. It was almost midnight. Another long day tomorrow, but she didn't care. She thought about Rosa and her absolute certainty that she had seen Joel running from the house, covered in blood. It was so absurd. She couldn't believe Sam was actually considering looking into her claims. Tessa felt sure the watch found in Joel's desk was what? Suddenly, she didn't know what she felt so sure of anymore. Granted, none of this made any sense whatsoever, but she remembered that day. Horrified hardly described her reaction to what she had seen. But she clearly remembered that when she had seen Joel's body by the pool's skimmer, something about it hadn't seemed right. It was Joel, she knew that. But she had always had a nagging thought that the man that was Joel, the bloated, decomposing Joel, had not been Joel. Of course, scientifically, she knew why the body didn't appear to be her husband's body. The face was gone. Slashed so badly with the box cutter that the medical examiner's office had needed DNA to make an accurate identification. And of course the DNA was an exact match. So what was it about his body that had bothered her all these years? Everything, of course. He was her husband, the father of her children, their twin daughters. As though jarred by a jolt of lightning, Tessa had a flashback from a conversation she and Joel had had years ago. They'd been having dinner at a fancy restaurant. She was pregnant with the girls. Tessa asked Joel if there were identical twins on his side of the family. Joel had seemed angry at her inquiry, but then he'd brushed it aside, telling her he personally didn't know of any twins. But she remembered he had said something about once having heard that there was a set a few generations before him. Had she imagined his reaction to her question? Had he actually been angry? She didn't remember the exact tone of the conversation, so it's possible she was reading more into an old memory than she should. But hadn't he acted strangely when they learned that they were having twins? Yes, she was sure he had. But then he had explained it away by telling her it was scary enough being a parent to one child, even more so to two at once. Those might not have been his exact words, but they were close. And he had been rattled when she asked him about it later. She didn't recall where the conversation had ended, but the discussion of twins had provoked Joel for some odd reason. Of course, once the girls were born, Joel was truly a devoted father. He changed diapers, helped with the 2 a.m. feedings, helped her bathe them.
Dear God, had he?
No. She wouldn't even allow her thoughts to travel down that sick road. Joel had his faults, but he was a good father. Sam opened the sliding door and Tessa jumped. She placed her hand on her heart.
I am definitely jumpy tonight, she said,
her voice sounding fake to her own ears. There was no way she would even consider sharing her thoughts about Joel with Sam.
I think you're just tired. Let's call it a night, and tomorrow we'll get a fresh start.
Sam stretched again, and she looked away.
Yes, I am bushed.
I'll lock up and see you in the morning, Sam said.
Thanks, Sam, for everything, Tessa said. Night.
Good night, he called out.
Tessa had planned to take a hot soak in the jacuzzi tub, but she was too tired after the emotionally strenuous evening she had just been put through. She had showered earlier, and that would have to suffice. So she quickly washed her face. She brushed her teeth, reveling in the real toothbrush, not that flimsy excuse for one she had to use in prison, though she had to remind herself not to get too used to these things, as there was no guarantee that she wasn't going to return to FCI. Although the chances that she would seemed to be vanishing, since Rose's account of what had happened on Saturday, when her family was still alive. Chapter 24. Tessa could not get to sleep. She looked at the clock for the 100th time and saw it was just after 2 o'clock a.m. She had wanted to get a good night's rest, so she would be sharp tomorrow when she saw Rochelle for the first time since being sent to prison. She would need to be at her mental best, as she planned to rake the woman over the coals and then some. Tessa would know if she was lying. She had spent most of her youth with liars, so she knew one when she saw one. Rochelle might act like a grieving mother, but Tessa knew that she, of all people, would be able to see through her lies. She rolled over, punched the pillow into a comfortable shape, and closed her eyes. She tried to calm her mind, focus on nothing so that she could fall asleep, but it was impossible. So she let her thoughts take her wherever they might, and after a while she drifted into a deep sleep. Tessa wasn't sure how long she had been asleep when she was startled awake. Glancing at the bedside clock, she saw that it was after 4. She sat up in bed, waiting to hear if what startled her awake would become evident. 1,000 thoughts went through her mind. She propped herself up in the bed, pulling the covers up to her chest. Thinking a reporter might have sneaked onto the property, she considered waking up Sam, but she knew that the newly installed alarm system would be blaring had anyone actually managed to get onto the property. It was probably her imagination. She was so used to being awakened at night in her cell. It was most likely a continuation of her experiences over the years in prison. She had never been a heavy sleeper anyway, and hadn't ever really required much sleep. She remembered that Mama Shirley used to tell her she didn't need much sleep because she was a true genius, just like the inventor Thomas Edison, who only slept a couple of hours here and there, according to historians. She didn't agree. If only Mama Shirley had known then why she rarely slept, she wouldn't have been so quick to compare her nocturnal habits with those of the great inventor. Glenn. That sleazy slimeball who called himself a foster father had spent much of his nights prowling through the house, making pit stops in her bedroom. She knew she should have told Shirley at the time, but all she had wanted to do was live there long enough to finish high school. She knew that having an education was her only way out of the life she did not want to live, so she tolerated the nighttime visits. He would touch her breasts and tell her she would make a good model for Victoria's Secret one day. Thankfully, though, it never went further than touching. Little had he known that her aspirations were much grander than wagging her tits and ass in front of a camera for the world to see. But she had kept quiet, and Glenn continued to visit her room until her senior year of high school, when she finally confronted him. She was not long from graduating from high school, and had already received a scholarship, so at least she knew she had a head start on bettering her life. The last time Glenn had paid her a nightly visit, she was ready for him. While she mostly kept to herself in school, she knew a few girls who were not honor students such as herself. She had never judged them for their wild, crazy behavior, because she didn't know what their life circumstances were. She had learned the hard way how hurtful it was to be looked down upon for things beyond her control, so she tried not to judge others when the so-called good girls would turn up their noses at them. It was at lunch one day, and she remembered it as though it had happened yesterday. Noreen Sellers was sitting alone at a table in the back of the cafeteria. She had dyed witch-black hair, black nail polish, and deep purple lipstick. Short skirts and two tight tops garnered her a great deal of attention from the boys in their senior class. Tessa had thought she was quite the character, and knew that she wasn't the slut that most of the school thought she was. They'd shared lunch more than once, and Tessa liked Noreen, and she knew that Noreen felt the same about her. It was during lunch once that Tessa had told her about Glenn and his nighttime visits to her room. Why she had spilled this to her, she wasn't sure, but she had needed to tell someone, and Noreen did not judge her. In fact, she had told her she had been through the same thing with three of her mother's boyfriends. She had asked Tessa to meet her after school that day, promising to help with her problem. At first, Tessa was afraid she might tell someone, but true to her word, they met at the Starbucks 3 blocks from the high school. Noreen had slipped a can of pepper spray into Tessa's book bag. "The prick comes into your room, spray him in the face. I promise you that he will never do it again. And with any luck, just the threat will give him a heart attack. Then they'll boot his perverted ass out of the system, and there goes his income." Noreen had been right. When Glenn sneaked into her room the next night, she was sitting up in bed, and instead of wearing her nightgown, she was still wearing the clothes she had worn to school. When he eased himself down on the edge of her bed, she whipped the can of pepper spray out from behind her back. Then with her other hand, she had switched on the light. "See this, Glenn? If I spray you in the face, Mama Shirley is going to wonder why you're in my bedroom, getting your eyes burned out of your pissy little head. And I plan to tell her. And the state." He had never said a word to her, then or after. He left her room and never returned. The day she graduated from high school, she returned the can of pepper spray to Noreen and thanked her for her help. She knew that what she had been through with Glenn was not normal. However, she had lived a rough life with her mother and Lara, and as she got older, she knew there were men who preyed on young girls. All this came back to her that Wednesday morning when Piper and Poppy told them that their uncle had touched them in their most private places. They were only 10 years old, for God's sakes. Tessa had tried to keep their lives as normal and wholesome as possible, and once they were old enough to learn about good touch, bad touch, she explained in very simple terms what they were, and always told them if anyone, it didn't matter who it was, ever tried to touch them, that they were to come to her immediately. Sadly, that had not happened. There were no tears this time as she remembered her daughter's tragic deaths. Maybe it was because she knew in a matter of hours she would confront Rochelle, and she would learn of Liam's whereabouts. And then she would begin to plan. She would need Lara's help. Sam had her phone number. She would call her and tell her she had to come to the house. It was a matter of life and death. And she had to add that there would be money involved. That alone would bring Lara to her. If there was money involved, she could always count on Lara to show up. Tessa tried to close her eyes again, hoping for at least another hour's rest, but sleep would not come. So she said to hell with it, went to the kitchen in her pajamas and made herself a cup of coffee. As she waited for the Keurig to do its thing, she prayed that the DA would realize that the evidence that her family was still alive on Saturday made it impossible for her to have killed them. After all this time, it was painful for her to think that the jurors who convicted her actually believed a mother, she, could commit the crime she was charged with. Had she looked that unsympathetic as she had sat at the defense table? She didn't know the answer, as she was sure she had been in a complete state of shock. Her arrest, then the trial, which was only 2 weeks after her arrest, a fact she later learned was unusual given the court's backlog, was the result of incredibly sloppy police work. How could she have killed people on Friday if they were still alive on Saturday? True, Rosa never came forward to tell her story, but how could a coroner mistake a Saturday time of death for a Friday time of death? Once they decided that she was the murderer, did they even bother to ascertain the time of death? Since she was on the mainland all day Saturday, she had to have committed the murders on Friday, to their way of thinking. Ergo, the victims were killed on Friday, and who needed to waste time on establishing scientifically when they were killed? They had to have been killed on Friday since she killed them. Someone had wanted her out of the way, and she just knew that someone was Liam Jameson. And in only a few hours, she would finally have the opportunity to tell his mother how much she hated him and that it was her life's mission to find him. Tessa knew enough not to let on about her plans for Liam, but she would let Rochelle see what the years had done to her. She wasn't even 50 years old and knew that anyone looking at her would add 10 years to her age, maybe even more.
"I take it you couldn't sleep either," Sam said as he entered the kitchen.
She had heard his footsteps on the stairs, so his appearance in the kitchen didn't surprise her. "Not much," she said, taking her cup of coffee and sitting on the bar stool. He made himself a cup of coffee, and she couldn't help but admire him. She was a female. He must have showered. His dark hair was still wet, and she could detect a woodsy scent coming from him. He wore a pair of navy slacks with a white shirt, untucked and buttoned only halfway. He was sexy and handsome, and why she had never really noticed this before, she had no clue. Handsome men hadn't been her priority.
"Darlene sent me a text message a while ago. Told me to tell you there was a dress and ankle boots in the closet, and the boots would cover your ankle monitor. Said they were in a box from Zappos."
"Zappos?"
"Darlene says it's the world's largest shoe store."
Tessa smiled. "I'd like to meet Darlene sometime, before... Well, if I return to prison, I'd like to thank her for all that she's done for me."
"You are not going back to prison. You could not have killed people on Friday who were still alive on Saturday. You'll meet her today. She's going to meet us in Lee's office. Darlene works part-time as a legal stenographer for Lee and a couple of other local attorneys. Gives her extra money for her grandsons, or at least that is what she tells me. Personally, I think Darlene is a workaholic, in a good way."
"I like her already."
"She's good people," Sam said. "Jameson Pharmaceuticals was lucky to hire her."
"No doubt," Tessa said, then went on. "Sam, what Rosa said about seeing Joel running from the house that day. Can we talk about this now? I was going to talk to Jill, given her profession, but I don't think this requires a professional opinion." He brought his coffee to the bar and sat next to her.
"Of course, Tess.
You can tell me anything.
She nodded. I'm just not sure where to start.
The beginning always works for me.
Of course. She wasn't sure what Sam would think of her after she told him her thoughts, but it didn't matter. This needed to be said, and she didn't want to wait until Jill's visit. When Joel and I first married, we had what you would call a whirlwind romance. It felt right at the time, or at least I thought so. I still do, but there were times when Joel acted, I don't even know what word to use, angry. And sometimes he could be cruel. I remember when I was pregnant with the girls, I was just a few months along. She stopped, as this was still a bit embarrassing, but she was a big girl now. Joel would laugh at me when I undressed, telling me I looked like a starving Ethiopian. I told him how that offended me, and he said he hadn't meant to, but I think he did. Another time, right around the same time, he implied that I was way too fat for a woman to be in such early stages of pregnancy. Of course, I had no one to compare to. This really bothered me. And from that point on, I tried not to eat much in front of him, and I didn't undress unless he was out of the room or the lights were off. She took a sip of her now cool coffee, got up, tossed it in the sink, then started brewing a second cup. "You want another?" she asked, and took the cup he held out to her. She finished brewing the coffee and returned to her seat.
"I have never been married, but I could see how this would hurt your feelings. You're bearing the man's children. I would think he would adore the changes."
Tessa blushed when he said this. He didn't. It wasn't those things that bothered me so much. It was the twin thing. When I found out I was pregnant with identical twin girls, Joel was not happy. Not at all. He tried to act like he was, but I knew that he wasn't. When I confronted him, he told me he was just overwhelmed at the thought of becoming a father, and the prospect of twins, he said it was double the anxiety.
"Okay," Sam said. "I would imagine it would come as a bit of a shock to anyone, but in a good way."
I was thrilled. I wanted a family of my own so badly. I hadn't had anything like the best upbringing, as I'm sure you know. I wanted to be the best mother in the world, and I made myself a promise that I would never let anyone mistreat my children, and that they would always be my first priority, even before Joel.
I think most mothers feel that way. Mine devoted her life to me. You know, I was an only child. My parents were older when they had me, but I was their world. When they died while I was in college, it totally brought me to my knees. They were the best. So I do understand the girls being top priority in your life.
I didn't know, Sam. I am so sorry.
There was no need for you to know.
She shrugged, not sure if that was the case. As the wife of the owner of Jameson Pharmaceuticals, she should have made it her business to at least get to know the company's CEO and others who held high positions in the company. How well did you know Joel? In college, I mean. He said you were best friends, but I never really questioned his past. Sam chewed on his bottom lip and took a sip of coffee.
We were dorm mates, but I wouldn't say we were best friends. I was older, by 3 years. When my parents died, I wasn't sure what to do with my life, so I stayed in school, lived in the dorm, even though my parents left their entire, quite substantial estate to me. I didn't want to be alone.
Joel was quiet.
Studied hard, wanted to go to work for his father. He was odd in some ways, and he had always had a bit of a temper.
What do you mean by odd?
This is just my opinion, Tess. I roomed with him, and we were young. He would bring girls to the dorm, and he didn't have to, either. He was well-funded, so he could have lived in an apartment. But he liked bringing girls to the dorm.
I think a lot of them were much younger than he was. He would always try to impress them, and when they didn't appear impressed with his life, his cars, his bank account, all of his material possessions, he dumped them. And I do not mean that he just never asked them out again.